Welcome to another episode of Authentically Moms. I'm Jacqueline.
And I'm Sujatha, and nothing is off limits, and we keep it real.
Okay, we have a special guest. His name is Rod Gray, otherwise known as Hot Rod the Hair God. He used to cut my hair. I met him from a really good friend who used to do her. He used to do her hair too. He is now living in Arkansas. And I wanted him on our podcast because he has had quite a journey. And I think it's so interesting in the evolution of where he started, how he grew up, and how things are different now. So, Rod, do you want to introduce yourself, kind of do a little, like, background?
A little background of me? I'm 65 years old. So I've been around the block and back again a few times. I was born in Arkansas, and then knew early on in life that I did not need to be in Arkansas.
Okay.
I needed to find the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. So I ran away from home by joining the Air Force.
Okay. Wow.
And that took me to Germany, and I found out who I am.
Okay, and what do you mean by that?
I'm gay, happily gay, and so I didn't know that in Arkansas.
Okay.
I had no clue. Although things happened to me, I didn't understand what they were, if that makes sense.
No.
No, okay. I was molested by my coach in high school.
Okay.
And so I didn't know that I was gay, but he did, so he preyed on me, basically. Mm-hmm. And so after I got away from Arkansas and went to Germany, then I met other people like me, and it made sense. I thought, oh, that's what I am.
Okay.
But I knew all along.
Yeah.
I knew from an early age that I preferred to hang around boys, but not like girls hanging around boys.
Yeah.
I just wanted to be around them. Mm-hmm. So it made sense to me, but it just didn't make sense when I was in Arkansas.
Yeah.
I was too young to understand. Mm-hmm. So going to the Air Force and getting to meet other people like me, then it all just kind of made sense.
How did it make you feel? I can imagine it's like a revelation, but just like a wow, just a really good feeling. You know, it sounds like you kind of knew, you didn't know what it was, whatever, but then you go there. You meet them, and then you figure out, finally. So what do you think that did to, like, you?
I think it lifted the heavy weight on my shoulders mm-hmm. off. Because when I was living in Arkansas as a kid, I didn't have anybody else to talk to. I didn't have anybody else to like, emulate. So I was, like, lost all the time. But stayed in church and did all the right things, you know, and tried to always be a good kid, make good grades, all that good stuff, to be like the perfect honor child. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And I did my best, but I knew I didn't belong. So, but when I got molested, it confused me, because why would somebody who's an adult do something like that?
Right.
You know, that just doesn't make mm-hmm. sense to me.
Yeah.
And it's someone you're supposed to trust. It's someone you're supposed to learn from mm-hmm. and whatnot. So, and I've been honest about this with all my classmates. They all now know from my class reunion and everything. But it's just, I had to get away. And the only way I could get away was to run away. Mm-hmm. It wasn't running away from my family. It wasn't running away from classmates or anything. It was really running away from him.
Yeah.
And so joining the Air Force was the best thing that could have ever happened, because I got to be a strong person on my own. Mm-hmm. I became my own person.
Yeah.
And not learn from other people how to be someone.
Mm-hmm.
Cultures around the world are beautiful. If you get a chance to learn from them, if you get a chance to be a part of it, you grow. You just learn so many things from other people. And in Germany, I went in my very first gay bar, and I was initiated that night. They made me dance on the bar. And and I, you know, it's like, okay, well, whatever, I'll do it, whatever. But I met some really good people. And then I understood, you know, I'm just like them. They're just like me. And I'm okay this way. And so are they. I'm not going to go to hell. Everybody had a Bible under their arm. You know, they're going to tell you you're going to go to hell. Mm-hmm. You know. Mm-hmm. And I realized I'm not going to be one of those kind of people. So I found myself in Germany.
So can I ask you, how old were you when you were molested by your coach? And then
13.
And you left your house at
17.
When did you tell your parents about?
At 17.
You told them about your coach?
I never told them.
You never told them?
I never told anyone until I was probably 36.
So you kept it? Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know if we were going to derail, but like,
no, do what you say, what you want.
How did you keep it in for so many years? That's almost 20 years. And how did you deal with that?
I just didn't talk to anybody about it. I never said anything to anyone about it until I got strong enough in myself to be able to be honest with everyone and say, hey, you know, you need to protect your children. You need to know who your children are around at all times. Mm-hmm. You need to vet your teachers because you never know who is working where. And so never leave your children alone unless you know exactly who they're with. Mm-hmm. And it's not my parents' fault because I was at school.
Looking back, did you see any red flags?
No.
With your coach?
No. Not at all.
Okay.
I would have never suspected. I would have never known. I certainly didn't know how to protect myself. We're talking a person who was 37 years old and I was 13. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I didn't know how to get away from it. There was nothing I could do to protect myself, actually. So
was it more than once or?
Oh, yeah. Lasted for 4 years. So at 17, wow. From 13 to 17, the only way I could think of to get out of that was to run away from home.
Oh, my gosh.
I couldn't tell my parents because I was afraid they would kick me out of the house. I couldn't tell my other teachers because I was afraid they wouldn't believe me. I couldn't go to the principal of the school and tell what was going on because he was the favorite coach the school had ever had. So nobody would have ever believed me, I don't think. I really don't.
So you're saying your parents still today don't know?
They're gone.
And they never knew?
I never told them. Don't feel sorry.
I don't. I'm not feeling. I'm just.
You just can't absorb it.
Yeah, I'm trying to absorb it. So I get it. It's a lot.
I'm sure it is. But I was not brutally attacked.
Right.
Not like that.
Right, right.
But it was molestation. It is what it is. So I just didn't know what it was. And I didn't know how to stop it.
Did you go through therapy or? So how have you learned to just move on from it? Or
I think it's because my inner self is stronger than I think it is. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I kind of grew up alone anyway. My brother and sister were much older than me. So I was an oops baby.
Oh, okay, okay, okay.
Mom and dad were older. And it's not their fault. They just didn't have time for me. And so I grew up all on my own. So I think I just had all that strength inside me that I didn't know about. And it finally came out while I was in Germany, mm-hmm. and then transferred back to the United States. It's like when I got back here, I didn't want to be here. I want to go back to Germany. Okay. Life there was so much easier,
right,
and so much better for me than coming back to the States. And everything's free over there. People hug and kiss. They don't care if you're male or female. It's beautiful to be a part of something like that.
Right.
In the United States, you can't hug your own dad because you're like, oh, that's gay. Yeah. Don't do that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I like, well, I love my dad. Can't I hug my dad?
Right. Yeah.
That's stupid to me.
Yeah. Everything is like sexualized here.
It's strange. It's, yeah. So strange. And sexuality in the United States is so strange. And in Europe, it's free. It's much more open and people don't hold back their feelings. But in the United States, they do.
So when you got back, where did you live?
Texas.
Texas. Did you feel at home here?
In the beginning, no. But when I found my own family, my own selected family, then, yeah, I found a family that I thought that I would always be a part of.
Yeah.
That so, was in Killeen.
Oh, I know the Killeen.
Fort Hood.
Yes.
I worked as a civilian for Fort Hood. And I did that for 2.5 years. And then I went through another witch hunt. And I'm like, I'm so tired of these witch hunts, you know, because that's what they do to gay people in the military.
I was going
to
say, wasn't there like a rule in the military?
What do you mean?
About gay people or like...
Well, you can't admit it.
Oh, you can't admit it.
You couldn't admit what it. No.
What is the saying? Like...
Don't ask, don't tell?
Yes.
Oh, that happened long after I got out. I mean, like 15, maybe 20 years after I
okay.
got out.
Okay. Okay.
So that's a new
thing.
But I was in... This is in the 70s.
Yeah. So what did you do? You just could not... So you just didn't... So you just didn't like... tell you didn't like you just were like under like just did not say anything about that.
Well, let me explain to you a witch hunt. They put you in a room and they try to entrap you.
Oh.
Or they will try to get you to admit that you're gay. And I don't know, this is where I told you I got strength within inside me that I didn't know I had. So I told the guy that was interviewing me, I said, well, where's this video you have that shows me doing something sexual with another man? I want to see it. This is interesting. And he said, well, we don't have video. I said, oh, then you have a recorded phone call. Let me hear it. I want to hear it. We don't have that. I said, well, then this is hearsay. Someone told you that I'm gay and you don't have proof. So why am I sitting here? I'm a decorated soldier. I do an incredible job. I think I need to go back to my job. And they didn't like that because they wanted me to admit that I was gay. And I said, I'm not going to admit something that you don't have proof on.
Right.
You give me proof and then you got me, but you have no proof. So why are you messing with me? Well, what they typically do is they'll grab her, they'll grab him, they'll grab you, and they'll grab you. And y'all all will say, well, he was at the same party I was at. Well, that only means I was at the party. That doesn't mean I'm gay. So why are y'all doing this to me? I really laid on them. I don't know where I got that strength. I don't know where it came from.
Yeah.
But I was the only one who did that. And I kept telling my friends, I would say, don't go in there and admit you're gay. Just tell them, where's the proof?
Yeah.
And you'll be okay. But no, they would start crying. Oh, how did you find out? You know, and then they would be kicked out, get a dishonorable discharge, go home with your tail between your legs, and you get nothing.
Wow.
I left the government with an honorable discharge, and I because I kept my cool.
After you got discharged, where did you go?
To Texas. And that's when I worked.
Well, you were Killeen, and then after Killeen.
After Killeen, I moved to Dallas.
Okay.
Because a headhunter found me. And I was a computer programmer. So I was getting ready to leave. And it was one more witch hunt. God. The guy looked like Kevin Costner when he was young.
Yeah.
And he kept moving his knees up against me. And I said, would you back up? You're in my space.
Yeah.
I don't like this. And he said, oh, it's okay. Don't worry about it. And he put his hand on my knee. And I
thought, oh, gosh.
I would knock it off. And I said, don't touch me. And it's just that strength that I had that I found when I was in Germany. And so I protected myself, which I couldn't do when I was a kid at 13.
Yes.
So I just learned how to fight back. Wow. My own way with words. Mm-hmm. Words can be very powerful.
How did you find community in Dallas?
Oh, that was easy. I moved here not knowing a soul. Mm-hmm. The headhunter found me, had five jobs lined up for me to interview, and I chose the one I wanted. And then I worked for an insurance company for 11 years. And during that period of time, I joined an organization called the Dallas Gay Alliance. And I met so many great people that were all volunteers, and they cared about the community and wanted to do good for everyone. So I thought, that's what I need to do. And so since then, I have raised so much money as an entertainer, which I never wanted to be. But when you're unfortunately good at what you do, mm-hmm. you kind of get pushed into it a little bit yeah. more than you want to. Yeah. But I've raised a lot of money.
Tell us about your now entertainer persona.
Well, my stage name is Patty LaPlace Safe.
Patty LaPlace Safe.
Mm-hmm. The Queen of Condoms. Get it?
Okay, yes.
Play safe.
Yes. So where did you get that? And why did you choose that name?
The people that I was hanging around wrote a newspaper, and I wrote a column for that newspaper, but I didn't have a nomenclature or a title for the column. And it was about helping people find light in the darkness of AIDS. And so I seem to be good about writing stuff like that and entertaining people with words. And they kept telling me, I need to come up with a name. I need to come up with a name. And I said, oh, no, it's okay. Just like a Dear Abby column, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How do I get my boyfriend to use condoms, you know? Then I would tell him, you know. Or there's a benefit show that's coming up. How do we get tickets? So I would tell them, you know, that was what my job was. And I enjoyed it. And then people started asking me to come entertain. And I thought, I'm not an entertainer. I'm never going to be an entertainer. But it eventually happened. And there was a show called War on AIDS. And I did the choreography for a trio. And the third one never showed up.
So you were the third.
And they pushed me on stage, put me in makeup, because I was a choreographer teaching them how to do the number. Mm-hmm. So I knew it, and nobody else knew it. So I said, if y'all can make me look like somebody that nobody will ever figure out it's me, I'll do it. But after this is over, I don't want anybody to know it's me. But I got a $20 tip. And I'm like, oh, $20 in the 80s, when normally you would get quarters and mm-hmm. dollars, maybe a $5 bill. But I got a $20 bill, and I thought, oh, I think I got a good career here.
Yes.
Maybe I could do this.
Oh, my gosh. So that was the first time you were in makeup?
Mm-hmm.
Were you in drag?
Mm-hmm.
And that was
it was
like,
all barred clothes, shoes that didn't fit me, wig that was crooked. You know, like just different things about it was so comical. If you could go back and look at the pictures, and I'm like, I don't think there is a picture actually, but there might be. I don't know, but I don't have it. And it's like, oh my God, what a scary thing. And they gave me another number that the other person was supposed to do that didn't show up for it, and I didn't know the words. Didn't know the words, but it was the song was called Don't Fence Me In. You know that song? And it's by Vera Lynn. It's an old country song. And so there's something about in the words about whippoorwill, the whistling of the whippoorwill tree or something like that. So they gave me a tree branch so I could hide my face. And I kept putting the tree branch in front of my face so that I wouldn't have to do the words. And then they had a fence for me to carry on stage. So when the words would happen, I would just turn around with the fence so that my back was to the audience. Because I didn't know the words.
Oh, my gosh.
But it was because I was pushed on stage with no preparation for it.
Oh, my gosh.
And now I am a Miss Gay America. So life has really gone away, way out of the way of what I had ever thought I would be. I thought I would be a computer programmer for the rest of my life, you know, and working in the corporate world and being involved with corporate life.
Yeah.
And then, you know, just so many changes happened. I became a hairstylist. I became very successful at it and never thought that I would. I thought it would last about a year because there's so many hairstylists in Dallas.
Yeah.
The competition is so great and it's hard to keep clients and stuff. I didn't have a problem. I just was very successful.
You have a name, Hot Rod, the hair god, I mean, you're going to walk out looking fabulous.
A client actually gave me that name. I didn't create it.
It seems like you like end up in the perfect situations.
Yes, I think you're right.
And, you know, it's just crazy because a lot of people would not take that as like clues or just not read that as like, okay, this may be the sign, you know, the $20 or like this feels something I'm good at, you know, just like kind of go where the calling goes instead of like, oh, no, I'm supposed to be a programmer. I came for this.
Yeah.
You know, when did you let that corporate job go and do this full time?
The insurance company that I worked for was American General, and they were bought out and were going to move to Indianapolis. So they had us in the big dining room that we had, and I just, I've got a question. Does it snow there? It does? Really? Okay, I'll take the severance package, and you can let the people that really need the money go, because I'll figure it out. I'll figure something out. I'll work somewhere else. And I went right to school. The severance package was enough for me to pay off my truck, make my house payment, pay for school, and not have to work while I'm going to school for 9 months.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So I was at the right place at the right time. I picked the right job. And out of those five jobs that I was offered when I first had the hunter looking for a job, I took the one that had the middle salary, not the highest salary, because the highest salary closed their business like 6 months after that interview. And the second one, I would have never been promoted. And the third one, which was the middle salary, seemed to me like it had the best growth opportunities. So for 11 years, I got to work with them. It was good. And the salary, oh my God, it was good. And so the severance package was just amazing. Mm-hmm. So I took it.
And you never went back?
Never went back. Never done a computer again. Except for my laptop.
You know. Oh my gosh. Tell me about the Dallas Times Herald.
Oh.
Yes.
When they outed me?
Yes. No, that, so what
yes,
happened
it was
there?
The Dallas Times Herald. They did the story about me being an AIDS educator. Is that what you're talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you found it. Mm.
I got a little
research.
Yes.
You have your own little
yes.
MacGyver. They outed me in the newspaper.
Did you know that they were going to do that?
I knew they were going to do an article, but I didn't know they were going to out me. And I went back to work at the insurance company. The next morning, there were people with their heads up over their dividers. You know, we had those little room divider thing. Big old open room. And they were all waiting for me to come in the door. As soon as I come in the door, they duck down, hid underneath, and they were all talking among themselves. And I had bronchitis really bad. So one guy thought that I had AIDS.
And he would
get off of the elevator the minute that I would get in. He would, even if it was on the wrong floor, he would get off real quick. And he told his girlfriend that I had AIDS. And so she started spreading the word. And I was like, that's not true. And to this day, where's wood? Real wood.
Oh, I don't know if that's real wood. Okay.
Yes. Okay. Man, let me knock on your dining table. I've not gotten AIDS. I've not gotten COVID. I've not gotten anything. So there, for all the good that I've done, I feel like that's a pat on my back.
Yeah.
That it's a pay it forward thing. That if I can do good for other people, and that movie changed my life, Pay It Forward. Mm. That I figured out why I'm who I am because of that movie. And so all the bells and whistles came on. And so I feel like maybe that's what's helped me stay alive and be healthy throughout all this whole process.
Yeah. What year was that with the Times Herald?
When the Times Herald came out? 89, maybe.
Okay.
Maybe about 89.
Was there like a big stigma? Was it just the AIDS or just being gay was like the
Oh, I think it all, yeah, I think all it was it. All a big red flag for everybody.
Uh-huh.
And AIDS made it really, really hard. And my first volunteer position was to go and change diapers, take food, sit with people, brush their teeth, change their sheets, feed their dog, walk their dog. I did that kind of volunteerism at the first part, but it made me so depressed because it was so difficult to be around people who were dying within an hour after I walked away.
Oh my gosh.
Or they die before I get there. Or my answering machine, back in the day, we had the old-fashioned answering machine.
Yeah, I know.
And I would come home, and I would have 75 messages on it. And I'm like, whoa, you'd listen to them. So-and-so died. So-and-so need diapers. So-and-so needs to go to a doctor. So-and-so died. So-and-so died. So-and-so died. So-and-so died. So-and-so needs medicine. So-and-so needs a call to their parents. It would be like so full of messages that I couldn't handle.
Wow.
So yeah. Going to the bar into a fantasy world and drink my life away was what I could have done.
Mm-hmm.
But I instead turned it around and entertained in those bars, which was another red flag. Nobody wants to date a drag queen. So that kept me alive too. You know, I mean, guys only wanted to date guys, thinking I wanted a sex change. No. I like what's down there. You're going to keep it. So it's like, this makes no sense to me. I'm an entertainer, like on TV, a comedian or whatever. Mm. And you can't see past that. That's your problem, not mine.
Yeah.
That's that strength I had from inside me. It protected me. So, I just turned it around and started entertaining when I got pushed into it and found out that I was kind of good at it. So then I started making money for the community, and then I got known for doing that, and everybody wanted me to be in their show. Everybody wanted me to come to their town. Everybody wanted me to help me with their organization. So it just grew and grew and grew. And I could have quit my job, but I would have had no way to make money because I was giving everything away to charity.
I see. Yes. Even though you brought in a lot of money, it wasn't for you. It was for the charity.
Mm-hmm. Always. So it was a volunteerism in a different position.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people think we got paid to do what we did, but we didn't. We volunteered and we gave our talents, and I bought my own dresses. I bought my own.
Yeah, let's talk about that. So you make your, sometimes you make your own costumes.
It's easier to make your own because you can't go to a store and buy it.
Like sizing.
It's like my waist is too low or whatever. And it would be way up here. And it's like, no, that doesn't fit. Or
you brought up a good point. I guess I never thought about that. Like, obviously, a lot of the clothes are made for women's bodies and you don't have them. So like, do a lot of drag queens make their clothes? Do they go to, is there like a certain store? Like, how do they get them to fit?
There is no store.
I understand. But like, it's so much more accepted now, you know, like, I mean, like, I wouldn't be surprised if there was a store.
There is no store. You know, still to this day, there's no store. There's shoe stores because our feet are big.
Mm-hmm.
I can't go to Dillard's and buy shoes. I can't go to Neiman's and buy shoes. So I can get them online, or I can go to some stores that will carry size 12, but not that many. And it's just you buy the shoes first and then you design your costume around the shoes.
Wow.
Because you cannot make your costume and then find the shoes because you're never going to find the shoes.
That's a great point.
Wigs don't fit our heads. because our heads are bigger than yours.
Mm.
So the little earpiece that's in the front will be up here. So you got to tease it to make it hide my sideburns or come down to where my ear is. You got to tease it and shape it because it's just impossible to buy a wig to fit our head. So we have to alter everything that we get. Jewelry has to be made that fits the length of our neck. I've got beautiful jewelry, and it's all made by my best friend in Tucson, Arizona. And so it's got to be custom made. So same way with clothing. You find someone who knows how to sew, and you say, hey, here's my body size. I want this color. We'll go find the fabric, maybe, or we'll order it or whatever. And then they'll make it and deliver it to me, or I'll go pick it up for a fitting. And it just, that's how it has to be, because our bodies are not the same. Neither are your bodies. Mm-hmm. You couldn't wear the matching clothes. It's a, everybody's clothes has to be fitted to them.
Wow.
But I learned to sew because it saved me money.
Right.
Because I pay this person $600 for something when I could have made it for $60.
When did you start doing hair? Is that why you started doing hair, or that was just something?
No, I had a coworker at the insurance company that would beg me to trim her bangs in the bathroom. And I'm like, are you sure? We go and knock on the door. Anybody in here? I'm going to come in and trim bangs. And then another one would say, hey, can you do a perm? I've never done a perm. And I'm like, are you sure? Well, I kind of trust you. So why don't we do it? You cook dinner, I'll do the perm.
Yeah.
Okay. And then it got to be where, like, hey, you want to trim my kid's hair? You know? And I had no license, had no training, but I had the gift.
Damn, you got a lot of gifts. That's another thing that you find yourself, people asking you to do this or doing that, and then you, like, there you go. Another path.
Remodel houses.
I feel really unsuccessful. Really. And I do it really myself. Not good at anything.
You give me a concrete saw and I'm happy fool.
Oh.
I love to cut up concrete and make paved stones to make a patio and recycle the concrete driveway that you don't want anymore. Or that crown molding, I could have done that for you.
Yeah, you're probably put up those looking all around my house now. All the shit that could be fixed.
Not fixed.
My hair, my makeup, what I'm wearing.
Your house.
No. It's just, there's, you just kind of like, I'm not afraid of anything. We were talking about this earlier. Tina asked me, like, how do you know how to do these things? I just said, I'm not afraid to do it. If I make a mistake, I'll figure out how to fix that mistake. But there's things you don't know how to do. There's ways to learn how to do it. Mm-hmm. And thank you for YouTube.
I give
you big credit because I can go and learn anything between watching 20 videos of how to put tile on a bathroom wall. Oh, that doesn't seem too hard. I think I can do it. Well, I got halfway through it. I'm like, but I kept going and kept going and I got it and I finished it. Yeah. And then, but I did it my way, not the way that you're supposed to. Because I got to do things different. Yes. I got to leave my mark on it.
There was something that I guess you mentioned at lunch that back in the day, this is like kind of like where maybe give advice or just kind of like point out the differences of, like, I don't want to say it's easier in these days, but it's more common in these days. Things are more accepted. Mm-hmm. But like, you would have to take off your makeup.
Oh, yeah.
Driving home.
Uh-huh.
Because if you got pulled over.
Mm-hmm. I'd go to jail.
Because you didn't look like your license.
Correct.
That's not the case anymore.
Not anymore.
Yeah. No. Was that in Texas?
That was in Texas. Mm-hmm.
Did you find that was like the same everywhere, though?
Well, when I traveled as Miss Gay America, I never had to worry about anything. Because I was under kind of like protection of the promoters that owned.
And where was that? Where was that taking place?
The Miss Gay America. The United States. Oh, the actual pageant happened in Dallas.
Okay.
That year.
Okay.
And it moved around. It's been in Memphis. It's been in St. Louis. It's been in Detroit. It's been in Atlanta. It's been Little Rock. It's been everywhere. So right now it's in Little Rock for the next 5 years. They've signed a contract with the hotel, and it will stay there for 5 years. And it was supposed to have been televised last year, but the TV station backed out, which is okay. I mean, eventually there will be another TV station that will do it. But it is worthy, truly worthy of being televised.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they televise like RuPaul.
Yeah.
Drag show. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I think, again, it's become more accepted. People are interested in seeing that. Like, it's no longer just like that. It's like a thing of beauty. Like, when I see you in costume or in drag, I can't even recognize you. You look beautiful.
Oh, wow.
Gorgeous.
Thank you.
You know?
Thank
like,
you.
I can't even do my makeup that good.
Yeah, you can.
No, trust me. I can't even do false eyelashes. I'm not good at any of that. But, like, that is a persona.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Would you say, like, all drag's persona is, like, very different from their, like, day-to-day? Like, they keep it completely separate.
There are many of them that... there are daylight and dark difference between what they are on stage and what they are at home. And then there's people, I think, like myself, that my personality is the same either way.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think I'm that way on stage? I'm just like I am right now. And so, but not everyone's like that. Because when they get on stage and the light hits them, something happens. Mm-hmm. Something grand comes out of them that wasn't there before.
I guess it's like acting.
It is acting. It's totally acting. It's not like we want to be women. It's like, it's just an act. It's no longer, no different than being like a rodeo clown.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Or a clown in a circus. It's absolutely no different because they're different than they are when they're off stage too.
Mm-hmm.
They're back to being their normal self, which might be shy, and lots of them are. Lots of entertainers are very shy off stage. Movie stars that I've met, and I've been lucky to meet lots of famous people because of being a stage performer, and they come and sit in the audience like, oh my God, I can't believe it. Look who's in the audience tonight, you know. And then, but they're shy too when they're not on that camera. So they hide from the public that we don't realize that. That's why you don't see them on the sidewalk, because they're hiding at home. They're afraid they're going to get attacked and can't be themselves, so they just don't come out. They order everything online and have it delivered at home, which we are now doing.
What would you, like, what kind of advice would you give someone who was kind of like, didn't find their voice, like you didn't have... your voice, you didn't find it until what you said 30.
It was like 38.
Yeah. You know, do you think it's easier in these times to find your voice because it's more accepted?
Actually, some of the young kids that I've met today are way ahead of what I was when I was mm-hmm. at that age. They already know. They already seem to be comfortable with themselves. And they're quick to tell you no. My pronoun is, whoa, okay, you know, and I didn't have that growing up. So they have a support system amongst them that stays amongst them. They don't go outside that circle. And I've been a mentor for the gay and lesbian young adults and Youth First. And it's important to see how they already know, because the internet has helped them a lot.
Yeah.
They can research and get all the help they need without anybody knowing they're doing it. Mm-hmm. So they already get an insight and an inner strength that helps them become who they really are. Mm-hmm. So the advice I have is go do your research. Look for every answer before you're okay with telling other people. Not necessarily keep it to yourself, but just wait until you know for sure. Because I've known those that have transitioned from one to the other and they regretted it later on. Because you can't back it up. You can't make that change and go back to what you were. So I think you should always know who you are. Don't let anything stop you from finding out who you are.
I think that's really powerful, but I think that also can transition to like anyone, really, right? Like as you live and things happen and stuff, you really find out who you are,
mm-hmm.
you know, gay, straight, bi, any of that, you know. And once you find out who you are.
Catholic, Baptist.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. It's like you got to find out.
You're confident. You mm-hmm. know this. You know what I mean? And so I think that's relevant across the board. I mean, we talked a lot about a lot of different things. Is there anything? Did I miss anything? Okay. So now, Patty, Le Play Safe.
Okay.
You host Gay Bingo.
Mm-hmm.
You do pageants. What else do you? You do shows at Hamburger Mary's and all these things. Like, you are known.
I travel coast to coast. So I get hired now and I get paid to be there. So that's okay. That's cool. because of having the title of Miss Gay America.
And what year did you win?
1995.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually did not win.
Okay.
But I am Miss Gay America. How?
Yes, I'm a little confused.
I like telling it. I had never competed before, ever. And here I am at a national pageant. I'd done city pageants. I'd done Miss Texas, but never.
Is it all drag?
Never.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I'd never made it anywhere. So I watched Miss Gay America 2 years in a row, sitting in the audience thinking, that's kind of cool. Maybe someday I'll get to do this. But I was told very coolly that, Miss Patty, you're not pretty. You don't have the right clothes. You're not talented. You stay with the charity stuff. And you let us stay with the pageant stuff. And everything will be okay. And I thought, wow. And my best friend at the time, I told him. I wasn't in tears, but it hurt.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm not pretty. I didn't care about the clothes. I didn't care about the talent. I was like, I'm not pretty. Because this is back in the day when I did not know about makeup. I really did not know about makeup. I was using CoverGirl. CoverGirl does not cover boy.
We've been there.
Yeah.
I don't think I still know how to put on
makeup. Well, I bet you've never heard this. CoverGirl does not cover boy. Okay? It's not thick enough. The beard's going to show. You know, it's going to show. The blemishes are going to show. So, I didn't know how to wear makeup. Green eyeshadow, lime green eyeshadow, and I thought I was real. Take a wig, shake it in the box, get it out of the box, shake it, put it on my head, think I was real, you know.
Yeah.
No pads, little bitty titties, you know. It's like, I thought I was real, you know. I didn't need help, you know. But in a way, the person who said that put a bug in me that caused me to say, I'm going to show you you're wrong, okay. And my best friend, when I told him, I said, it's not that it hurts, but I think I want to do this. The Miss Gay America that won in 1995, Ramona Legere, was from Louisiana. And at the time, my best friend was already a winner for Mr. Gay All-American. And I helped him backstage. So I learned a lot from helping the boys backstage. They're all male. There's no drag in that. No makeup. They're all male. So swimsuit, tuxedo, talent, that kind of thing. And so I'm back there backstage and I'm gluing his swimsuit on his butt so it wouldn't slide when he walks out there, because it does happen.
Yeah.
And you want it to stay in place. So, and Ramona's over here working on Mr. Louisiana, and And she said, "You're fun. You should enter Miss Gay America." I'm like, "Really? You know, like, I've been thinking about it, but, you know, do I need to do this?" And so he told me, he said, "Okay, after I win this, I'll help you."
Oh.
So, and he did. He became my talent with me. And it was a duet, and it started out with, it's a ballroom dance number. Nobody had ever done ballroom on stage for Miss Gay America. It's always hip-hop dancing, and, you know, or an illusion of Janet Jackson or something, you know. So it's always high-energy stuff. And here I come through with this very romantic story with this beautiful man who is in this gorgeous costume, and I'm in this big ball gown, and we're doing this cat-and-the-mouse chasing routine, and it made you either want to love him or be jealous that he is who he is, or make you love me, or jealous of me because I had him. You know what I mean? It's like, it was one of those kind of routines. And it was Beauty and the Beast, Phantom of the Opera, and Dreamgirls. He sang from Dreamgirls. I sang from Phantom of the Opera. And then we did Beauty and the Beast together.
Wow.
Oh, God. I got chills.
I didn't even know you could sing.
And I can't sing. It's lip sync. But we did the routine together.
Yeah.
And so here we are dancing and doing this ballroom dance number. And I got 3 standing ovations. The audience was screaming my name. But I became first runner-up.
Mm-hmm.
And Ramona became the winner. And she's the one who asked me to enter the pageant.
Yes.
And then as soon as it was all over, we're standing in line. I felt like I won the pageant because I was first runner-up my first time, you know. And so Ramona was standing in line. I was right behind her. And we're waiting for the judges to tell us what they thought of what we had done. It's a critique session. And she turned to me and she said, "You know, if you had beat me, I would have been so honored to be your first runner-up."
Mm.
And I'm like, wow. Well, thank you. Yeah. You know, go in there and find out. I want to find out. Like, get in there. And so 5 months later, she passes away.
Oh, my God. From what?
She had an ear infection. And the infection actually went to her spine.
Oh,
because
my.
The eardrum burst in a flight. And when it burst, there was nothing you can do. The fluid is floating around inside the ear and in the sinuses. And it went to the spine.
What?
And took her in 3 days.
Know if I've ever heard of that. Jeez,
that's and
crazy.
So I got a phone call that told me that I need to be prepared, and I was at my first job as a hairstylist, and I'm like, "What do you mean be prepared for what?" "Well, we think that Ramona might pass away, and so if that happens, you will be Miss Gay America." And that's where the rules are. If the winner does not fulfill their duties, the first runner has to step forward and take over. And I said, "I'm okay. Let me think about this a few days because I'm not prepared for that." And I knew I would have to quit my job. Mm-hmm. I would not have anything for income except for Miss Gay America. And I turned my fees over to Ramona's partner because he needed the money. And I really didn't need the money because I had that 9 months of mm-hmm. money put away. And so I really kind of thought about it and said, "Well, you know, let him have the money. It's okay. She did win it. I didn't." And then I fulfilled all the duties, traveled, and got paid for being at each location. And that was enough for me. And then at the end of the year, I said, "You can crown me at the end of the year. That way she will still be in the history books as Miss Gay America." And we just won it together. I carried her crown everywhere I went.
Wow.
Instead of putting it on my head, mm-hmm. I carried that crown. And everybody accused me of putting it on my head. And said, "Oh, I bet you put it on your head, didn't you? You tried it on." No, I never did. Because it wasn't my crown.
Yeah. But like, what would that matter?
Yeah, I know.
You know?
But that's how it was.
Yeah.
I mean, like, they got mad at me because I wouldn't step up and be Miss Gay America. But I had to do it my way. I wanted her to be remembered.
Yeah.
I didn't want her to be removed from the books and I be the only Miss Gay America for 95.
Yeah.
Because she won it and I didn't.
Yeah.
Like, he won it. You know, I mean, it's like, but you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's not fair to change history.
Right.
So let it fall as it would. And the 2 years that I watched it and tried to figure out what to do right and what I wanted to do, and I knew I wanted to be different from everybody else, I just was myself, had no idea that I was actually winning something. And when they called me out to be top 10, for real? Are you sure? Wait a minute, there's people who've been doing this for 22 years or 17 years or something, and you didn't call their name. You call my name, right? Are you sure? And I thought they picked me so I would make the rest of them look good. I really thought that.
I see.
But at that time when they called the top 10, I really was the winner. And it flipped because when we had the onstage question, I got nervous. And I'd never been nervous. I really was never nervous during the whole thing. But I got nervous on that one. And my personality didn't come out. I was dry. And I'm like, answered the question. Like, thank you. Bye. Instead of letting my own personality come out.
Yeah.
And if I had, I would have been the winner.
Yeah.
But then that would have changed history. And she would have never won. And she lived her whole life to be Miss Gay America. So
yeah.
I just wanted to be.
Well, I think, you know, so many things have happened in your life that, like, you know, either by chance or by push or by other people, like, it's just, like, pretty incredible that, you know, you followed all those paths. Look where it's led you. You never let anyone tell you you couldn't do something.
Oh, no.
You know, you prove them wrong. And at the end of the day, I think the most important thing is, like, you be your true self, you know, unapologetically your true self.
Mm-hmm.
Gay, straight, bi, whatever it is.
Jewish, you know? Baptist,
exactly.
Buddhist, whatever,
mm-hmm.
Be yourself.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that was great. I mean, I learned a lot, honestly.
Did you?
I did. Yeah. And it's great to hear, like, your journey,
you
know, from exactly, from, like, where, you know, you've come from and, like, you know, trauma makes you you. Whatever, what did I tell you? Whatever you go through, you grow through, right? And so I think it's really great that you do a lot of volunteer stuff, because you have so much to bring to the table, so much that people can relate to or, like, feel safe sharing, you know, because you also share. And I think once you make yourself vulnerable, they also too make themselves vulnerable.
Well, I feel they're safe to be vulnerable.
Exactly. It's a safe space. So we want to thank you for coming on and sharing everything. We love you. I wish you could still do my hair. I didn't know you're in town to do gay bingo and stuff. So I wish we could go.
Well, it's not my last one.
I know.
Maybe we can plan it in advance.
Exactly. Do you have anything to add? No? Anything last minute? Hot Rod?
There is so much more.
I know.
But it's not enough time.
I know. We'll have to have a part two when you come back in town.
Okay.
Yeah, it sounds good. Well, thank you for being on our podcast. We appreciate it. And we're going to share pictures of Hot Rod and also Patty LaPlace Save. So we'll put that on our Instagram so that all you guys can see who we're talking to and see her all pretty beautiful.
And they can follow me on Instagram.
Exactly.
It's Patty LaPlace Save.
Patty LaPlace Save. We will put your link on there as well.
Okay, cool.
So if any of you guys have any questions for us to pass along or anything you want to say, just send us an email at authenticallymoms@gmail.com or comment us and DM us on our Instagram at authenticallymoms, and we'll see you next week.
All right. Goodbye.
Thank you.